This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oakland.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Pena.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, flying solo on this edition of Trainer Talk this afternoon. The Ponta for the Pick Four, not able to be in the house with me this afternoon, so to speak. But we do have a phenomenal hour of programming coming your way. We're going to be joined by trainer Byron Hughes, better known as Scooter. We'll talk to him in the first half of the program. And then trainer Tim Ritchie going to be with us in the second half. So hold on to your seat. Going to be a good show over the course of the next hour. And we do welcome everybody just joining us across the country on Sirius Channel 93. And for all of you who have been with us on XM 209 for the past couple of hours with our Del Mar preview and a look at the first two races on opening day where the turf meets the surf. Welcome back to the program. And yes, we do welcome everybody joining us on our website, horseracingradio.net. You can now catch all of our broadcasts each and every time we're on the air at horseracingradio.net. Trainer Scooter Hughes has conditioned 114 career winners. They have earned more than $3.4 million in purses, and he is nice enough to spend some time with us here this afternoon. Scooter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I can't hear you too well, though.
All right, we'll get it cranked up a little bit for you. Is that better?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm hot, but that's all right, I guess.
Now, where are you now?
I'm at the training center.
Okay.
Barnstable. So.
In Lexington.
Yep, in Lexington.
Back from Arlington, where it was a triumphant weekend for you with your veteran Rahi Strada?
Yep. We had a big time up there.
It's always
sure.
always a big time when Rahi Strada goes to the post in the Windy City. And I guess he'll be pointing for what, his fourth consecutive Arlington Million run next month?
We're looking at it for sure. We're going to give it a try. If it looks good and Gila feels good, we'll see what we can do.
Well, we'll spend a lot of time talking about Rahi Strada, I'm sure, as we move throughout the interview here this afternoon. But I want to go back to the beginning a little bit, Scooter. And well, first of all, where did Scooter come from?
My dad worked on a Green Tree Farm here in Lexington when he started out. And it was owned by the Whitneys. And the guys working there were big Yankees fans. And they all played softball as they had a farm league and stuff, and they were big fans of Phil Rizzuto, who was better known as Scooter Rizzuto, and I guess they just started calling me that. I used to hang around them all the time and watch the games and get in the way, I'm sure, and so they started calling me that, and it stuck with me.
Did you play baseball? Were you a second baseman or a shortstop?
He was shortstop, I
yeah,
believe.
Shortstop.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you play baseball growing up?
No, not really. wasn't really much. I played football in high school, and that was the extent of my career, I guess.
So how did Scooter Hughes end up getting involved with horse racing? I guess just being around it with your dad, is that how it all started?
Yes, he left Green Tree. He was hired by the Asbury family, and he ran Forest Retreat Farm for, I guess, 30 years, and I grew up there. The main farm was down in Nicholas County. And so I, just grew up around it, started working on the farm when I was, like, 12, 13. And as usual happens, most kids, or a lot of kids, just get into it from from being growing up around it. The farm did expand while I was there to, you know, where they had at one time 12 stallions or so, and we had a training division, which my mother ran that, and broke a lot of yearlings and did a lot of layups, and that's where I got interested in the training side of it, because we'd always have a couple of our own that we just trained on the farm there.
Who were some of the stallions that stood there?
Well, the biggest one was Nascra. You know, he was the major horse.
Sure.
For a while there, he was one of the top sires. And then, I mean, they had a bunch of others. Mr. Reed always stood there, and Groton was their first one, who was a green tree horse that was very fast, but never, I don't think he won any stakes. And but he was pretty successful. This was way back when things were booming, so, you know, there's a lot of mares around, and a lot of business to be had, and they were right in the thick of it. They sold yearlings at the July select sales at Keeneland every year, and they bred Determined, who won the Derby, I think in 52 or 3. And so I was around a lot of nice horses growing up, and just got into it.
So what exactly was your first job when you got to the farm?
Mucking out stalls, of course.
You started like so many other trainers in our game.
Right.
We talked to a lot of trainers who start the same way.
Yeah.
You start with mucking stalls, and then all of a sudden you're going to the Arlington Million with a horse like Rahi Strada.
Yeah, it wasn't sudden, but it worked out.
So what I mean, I know you said you were around the horses working on the farm, and that's what got you interested in training horses. What year did you take out your trainer's license?
Well, I was afraid you'd ask that. I can't quite remember. I worked when I was in high school, or finished high school. I worked in New York for Phil Johnson for a summer, and that got me really interested in it. But I did 2 or 3 years of college, and then I went to work for John Hettinger up in New York. He was starting a farm up, and I helped him build his farm up to, you know, to where we had about 3 stallions. I worked there 6 years, and a bunch of mares and so forth, and so I did that, and then decided to come back to Lexington, and my dad had his own farm, my parents did, and I just took that over. They needed somebody to run it, so I took all the overflow from Forest Retreat, and that's just did that for a while, and ended up helping being an assistant with him on Forest Retreat, and then you know, that way that's when we started having a couple at the training barn of our own, just playing with them, and then I ended up taking out my license, and it was probably 25 years ago or so. And I got a few stalls here at the training center here on Paris Pike. I'll put a plug in for them. And I've been here pretty much the whole time. I started out with just 2 or 3 stalls, and now I have a whole barn, 19 stalls right now that I hopefully I'll keep it full.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Scooter, because I've always looked at you as being a horseman. And what I mean by that, we talked to a lot of trainers on this show, and there are mm-hmm. trainers and there are horsemen, and you're mm-hmm. one of those guys that's been around it since your youth, as you alluded to,
right.
And you really are a horseman and a hands-on guy. You don't have the big stables of a Pletcher or a Baffert or a Steve Asmussen, but
right.
You're one of those guys that gets to put your hands on them every morning. How important is that?
Well, I got kind of got started kind of late, and working on the farm most of the time through the years, and then when Forest Retreat started winding down, they started shutting it down. There weren't any kids to take over and so forth, I got more into the training, and I just made a decision I didn't want to ever, I probably couldn't handle having 100 horses. So I didn't even want to try to do that. I was going to keep it small no matter what, because I do like to do that. I'm not a claiming trainer. I don't claim horses and try to improve them. It's a tough game, and you got to do a lot of it to make it pay. And I've just not ever been into that.
Most
of the horses I've gotten have come from breeders, because I grew up in that business. So I had a lot of people that would send me horses I knew growing, being in the breeding part of it. And that's how I got horses I have now, pretty much.
Well, I know you couldn't remember the exact year that you took out your trainer's license. Do you remember your very first winner that you ever saddled?
I had a horse named Premier Dave, and I ran him around. He won for me, and then I was going to turn him into a steeplechaser, because he decided he didn't like being on the starting out of a gate on the track, so they don't use gates as a steeplechaser. So we went, and but then that steeplechasing was pretty big around here, and I won a race at Iroquois, which was a hunt club meet with him. So that was my first winner. He won that, and then his steeplechase career was short-lived. He didn't do too well. So
you didn't have my buddy Sean Clancy on him, did you?
No, it was way before he started riding. I'll tell you who did ride him. You might know is Johnny Burke, who works for Darley now.
Sure.
He was riding just in that flat race.
Big difference between training a flat horse and then training a horse to go over jumps?
They either have the ability to jump or not. I mean, you have to go through a lot, and my horse wasn't a great jumper, and they to be a really good steeplechaser, they have to really like to jump, and the good ones do. So if you watch them at Saratoga, you'll just see them. They'll skim those jumps, and there's no wasted motion in them, and those are the good horses. And a lot of them never learn to do that.
Bigger thrill, winning the steeplechase or taking the Arlington Handicap with Rocky Strada?
I think the handicap is the best. So. when you make history, it's a special thing, and I think Robert really likes that too. The owner,
he's talk about Robert Courtney.
Well, I've known him pretty much all my life too, and he grew up on the farm, and he and his dad had a farm, and we both kind of diverged away from it for a few years there in our 20s or so, and when I was in New York, and when we both came back, he started helping his dad, I was helping mine, we got going, we were reacquainted, I guess you'd say, and just over the years, it evolved to where, he was giving me a horse or two here and there, and ended up, Rahi came into the barn. He actually foaled Rahi for one of his big clients, Mr. Carrion, and Carrion was, when he got older, he was phasing out of the business, and Rahi was actually the last horse he owned, I believe, and I told Robert he ought to buy him, because he'd already shown that he had a little quality, and I just said, we'll have some fun racing him around here, and he's bought him, and the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, well, a lot has changed since Rahi Strada broke his maiden in 2006 at Ellis Park. Tell us the story of Rahi Strada, because, it's interesting, Scooter, when you Google Byron Hughes, you get Richard Hughes, you get B. Wayne Hughes, and you get Henny Hughes. But when you Google Rahi Strada, your name pops up all over the place. So tell us the story of Rahi Strada. For people that don't know, he's a 9-year-old gelding, the first horse to win 3 editions of the Arlington Handicap in his 44th career start. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, Frankie Brothers had him at first when he started out at Ellis there. And he actually, I think he, at there at Churchill, he was third in the state for him. And then he had a few problems, and Frank, he was winding down, and Mr. Carrion was winding down. So Robert, I guess, had him on the farm. He was rehabbing from an injury, I believe. And Mr. Carrion just said, well, send him to Scooter and we'll, you know, get rid of him. He can try to sell him or whatever. So I had like three horses for him. And we got, like I said, we got down to the last one. And that's when he had a filly with me too. I can't remember her name though, but she was a very nice filly, but she was a bleeder. So her career ended early. But, so we were running him then. He came and, I think he was still just won one race when I got him, maybe two. But so I was running him. You know, I just found his level, which was high claiming allowance races. And first time I figured out that he might be a little better than I thought was I took him to Hawthorne in the winter, in like December one year, to run on the grass, and I couldn't believe that we got to run on the grass, number one. But that was when Inez started riding him. And I credit her with I don't know, getting him on the track to being a good horse. She had a way with him and really loved him and built his confidence up over several races. And, he just started getting better and better. I mean, the first few times, when he won at Keeneland, I remember I ran him at Mountaineer and he was off the board for 50,000. And then I took him to Keeneland and I ran him in an allowance race on the grass. And, he's probably 40 to 1 or something. He paid a lot of money. And after that race, I said, well, we're going to run him in the River City at Churchill. And he thought I was crazy then, too. And so I said, well, we got to find out how good he is. He is 5 years old, you know. So we took him over there, and he won that race. I know he was 50 to 1 or 45 to 1 or something that day. And
well, so you never need to work again.
I know. I do. Well, the trouble is I don't bet on it. If I do, it's very little. But he didn't have those odds. In the next from then on, I mean, we get good. He always pays well. People can't believe he's gonna. I mean, he paid $8 the other day, which is pretty good. I mean, he was the morning line lukewarm favorite, I call it, 5-2, and so I thought that was. You know, people can't believe this old horse can keep on doing that.
Yeah. What's he meant to your career?
Well, he's, you know, obviously he's the best horse I've ever had. I had one old horse that named Solo Cat. I had him all along, and he actually ran until 9 years old too. And he had a lot of off time too because he wasn't that sound. And but I was part owner of him, so we just turn him out whenever he went bad. But he won a little stake at Mountaineer. He won $250,000. I guess he was, when he was a baby or yearling, he got a hock infection, and the vets all said he'd never race, period. So I kept him going that long off of that. And I guess probably he's showed me how, you know, what you have to do to keep them going a long time.
Yeah. Well, when you get a horse like that and they race until age 9 and who knows with Rahi Strada, maybe beyond, but do you get to consider them kind of part of the family because you're around them so much?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Peace. I mean, Robert and I've already decided, Robert has a farm and he said, as soon as he can't compete at this level, we're not going to just drop him down into claiming races. He's going to go to the farm, you know, for the rest of his life. So we've already decided that, and that's what we're doing last 2 years, we've run them in that allowance race at Churchill. They always have one in the first week that have wide open conditions. And just to see, that's just to see if he wants to run, if he wants to be competitive. And that's the test. And if he shows that, which he has the last 2 years, I mean, almost won it this year, we'll go on with him just one race at a time. And he's good in that he's really never had any major problems since those early years when he was 2 and 3 years old. I mean, we have the odd thing, his feet are a little shelly, so they give us trouble. But we've got a blacksmith / veterinarian doing him now, and we put glue on shoes whenever his feet start getting a little messed up or whatever you want to call it. And so that's the way we've gone the last 2 years, and it's working out. He's in good shape now, knock on wood.
Scooter Hughes joining us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget to get your next graded stakes winner at the Saratoga Sale coming up August 5th and 6th, all presented by Fasig Tipton. Scooter, easier to train a young horse or a seasoned veteran like Solo Cat and like Rahi Strada?
When they get that far along, if you've had a fire, as I've had them all along, I know them very well. And I have pretty much one rider riding Rahi all the time, and he knows him, he loves him, and takes care of him, and he knows exactly how he's feeling and stuff. So it's, once they get to be that, good form, when you find out their form, all horses pretty much have a level. You just have to find what that level is. And, a lot of $5,000 claimers will try their heart out. They just don't have the ability to run faster than that. And so that's what you look for. The worst ones are horses have ability and aren't trying to do it. And sometimes that's the most frustrating thing, because you try all different things to get them to try to win with them. They won't do it. So I got a couple of those in the barn right now. So, but the young ones you're trying, I probably take longer to get them to a race than most trainers, just because I baby them along. I like having a horse through its whole career, and fit trying to figure them out. That's the part I like. And like I said, I'm not into the claiming game. And there's enough places to run them around, especially in the summertime right now, that I ship around Mountaineer and Arlington and Indiana, and so it's all Ellis Park right now. So it's a lot of spots that you can find to run them in, and so it's pretty good right now to do that. And it's more opportunity. You can find spots for most all of them.
Scooter, only about 3 minutes left, believe it or not. This has really flown by. Your wife, Tracy, your entire family involved with your operation. Spend just a minute or two talking about them. And was Tracy a racetrack romance? Is that how that came about?
Well, more of a farm romance. She worked for Gainesway for 14 years. And when I was doing the farm breeding part, I got to know her. She booked the stallions and did all that. So I knew her for a long time before we got together, and she was married. I was married when we first met, I'm sure, but we both ended up single at the same time, and things progressed from there. So she did that, and then she's worked for a couple other people, but she's been with Bob McCann, who's a bloodstock agent, who sells a lot of seasons. That's his main thing. And so she's worked for him for the last 6 years or something. And so she helps me too with all my paperwork, and and likes to go to the races, and we own several of our own together. So, yeah, she's very involved in it. She also is very involved in golf. She loves playing golf, which I don't.
Yeah, it's an evil game. I don't know how anybody could really love playing golf. There's no such thing.
she's very good, and I could never be as good as she is, and she's very serious about it. So I don't think we'd do well out there together.
What do you like to do when you're not at the racetrack then? What's your hobby?
I don't have any major hobby. We try to take travel a bit. We've been a week before we went to Arlington. She didn't make it to Arlington this year, but week before we went to California to wine country for 4 days with some friends that have done it before. We try to take little vacations every 3 or 4 months to make sure we don't get too far apart. And the most of the time, I haul most of my horses to the races, and so I'm gone. When these are all running, I'm gone quite a bit, and at least till late in the night to take them and to ride them and so forth. So we do that, and like I said, she keeps track of everything, and it all works out well.
Well, Scooter, it's worked out very well for you, and you're a class act, and I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight on Trainer Talk. All of our guests who appear live on the show receive gifts from Flair Equine Nasal Strips and from EPO Equine, so we'll get those to you, and looking forward to seeing you at Arlington next month, my friend.
We're shooting for that. We'll see how it works, and we'll go from there.
All right, Scooter Hughes. You're on Trainer Talk.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Say hi to Tracy.
Will do.
Interesting story. And the 9-year-old gelding, Rahi Strada, will see if he can pull it off in his fourth consecutive run at the Arlington Million. Pretty incredible. Trainer Tim Ritchie coming up on the second half of Trainer Talk, all presented by Phasic Tipton. Stay tuned. We're back with Tim right after this.
The Phasic Tipton Saratoga Sale.
Midnight Lucky Freedom Child.
Plum Pretty.
Union Rags.
Money Proposition.
Black Onyx.
Guilt Trip.
Ranked number one by percentage of Grade 1 stakes winners, graded stakes winners, and stakes winners among North American yearling sales. It's the Saratoga Sale, August 5th and 6th, beginning at 7 p.m. For more information, visit phasictipton.com and get your next graded stakes winner at the Saratoga Sale. Attention horsemen, are you getting the most out of your equine athlete? All natural EPO Equine could be the answer. EPO Equine is the most potent blood builder on the market. Top trainers like Scott Lake and Steve Margolis are reporting dramatic improvements in their horses. Easy to use and clinically tested, EPO Equine is the product your horses need for speed, strength, and stamina right out of the gate. Call 215-501-6880 or visit epoequine.com. Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair strips' gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of Flair strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair strips.
This is Daily Racing Form's Dan Ullman with some big news about DRF bets. Thousands of players like you have already made the switch to DRF bets, and now there's an even bigger reason for you to join. Free DRF PPs. That's right, for the first time ever, get free Daily Racing Form PPs when you wager with DRF bets. These are the DRF past performances you know and love, and DRF bets is the only place you can get them free. So why wager anywhere else? With DRF bets, you'll get the best sign-up bonus in the business, free guides and analysis from DRF's top handicappers, breaking news, analysis, and wagering on the go control with DRF and DRF Bets Mobile, one-click multi-ticket wagers with DRF Ticketmaker, and now free daily racing form PPs. Only one place gives you the PPs you prefer when you wager, DRF Bets. Join today and wager with the most trusted name in racing. And if you sign up right now, you'll get a $125 cash bonus. Find out more at drf.com/bets. That's drf.com/bets.
The Haskell Invitational. Haskell Invitational.
And look at that, Lucky and Martin Garcia romping the Haskell. Coyle and Shackelford to the wire. Here's the finish. Coyle has won the Haskell. And Bob Baffert has won the Haskell again. Painter by four on the wire.
The Grade 1 Haskell Invitational. Live from Monmouth Park. Sunday, July 28th. Only on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. Presented by Phasic Tipton.
Mike Penna back with you on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A fun visit with trainer Scooter Hughes in the first half of the show, and looking forward to the second half with trainer Tim Ritchie coming up in just a minute. We do want to remind you that you can always get your next greatest stakes winner at the Phasic Tipton sales. The Saratoga sale coming up August 5th and 6th. Make sure you are there. And remember, too, that the search for your next Grade 1 winner begins at TaylorMade. Since 1976, buyers have found 83 Grade 1 winners and 13 Breeders' Cup champions at TaylorMade. What will you find? Well, visit TaylorMadeAdvantage.com to find out. That's TaylorMadeAdvantage.com. Trainer Tim Ritchie has trained more than 2,374 career winners. As a matter of fact, that is the exact number of wins to date. His runners have earned nearly $44 million in purses. He is a native of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he's nice enough to join us now. Tim, welcome to Trainer Talk.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, being a native of Pittsburgh, I have to ask, we'll get this out of the way right off the bat. Are you a Steelers fan?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, good man, because I was going to have to cut the interview short if you said no. Well, Tim, I mentioned those 2,374 career wins, just a spectacular number. You were one length shy of sweeping the 2005 Triple Crown with the Fleet Alex, and after watching his dominant wins in the Preakness and the Belmont, how on earth did he lose the Derby?
Well, he had kind of a troubled trip, and he got bounced around a little bit twice on the backside, kind of ran into a wall of horses at the head of the stretch, and unfortunately got shuffled down to the inside, and the track was playing very deep on the inside all week long at Churchill that week, and we were pushed onto the rail. Giacomo had an outside trip, and I think that kind of played a lot of it, but obviously he was much the best of that field because he went on and improved in the next two races.
Yeah, we'll spend a lot of time talking about a Fleet Alex here later on in the interview, and really want to hear the entire story of a Fleet Alex, and he was so spectacular earlier in his career, so we'll get to that here in just a little bit. But want to kind of go back to the beginning with you. You had been riding horses since you were what, about 2.5 years old? Is that where it all started for you?
I was just infatuated with horses ever since I was very young, and my aunt and uncle actually had a riding stable, and I just kept bugging my father until finally, about my second or third birthday, they had a pony ride, came into the city, and it was there for my birthday, so got to ride my first horse, and from then on, I was spent almost every weekend of my life with my aunt and uncle at their riding school all summer long, and rode for ever since then.
Yeah, what was the name of your first horse there?
Oh, there was a lot of them. We just had horses. They had 30, 40 horses in their riding school. The first horse I rode was named Sonny. He was a big spotted horse.
And then, of course, you at the age of 18, went on to attend the Potomac Horse Center furthered your education there. Talk about that.
Yeah, I left when I was in high school. I gathered up some money, bought a horse, schooled it and sold it, and with that money I had enough tuition to go to the Potomac Horse Center. I stayed there off and on for about 2 years and rode all their show horses, and they sponsored me for the equestrian team, and I trained off and on with the three-day team, USCT team, and competed with them for 2 years, and then rode some steeplechase horses for 2 seasons, and then was needed to really get on with it and make some money, and then I went to the flat tracks.
Yeah, talk about that experience with the Olympic team, because that's something that most people don't have the opportunity to experience. What was that like?
It was great. I mean, it was a good education. You know, with a three-day horse, they've got to be very fit and also very well-schooled because they're doing different phases. The dressage phase, they have to be able to perform specific movements and not lose their cool. So you've got to really school the horse well, but at the same time, to do the three-day phase, on the third day with the steeplechase, cross-country, roads and tracks, they've got to be fit enough to go about 15 miles. So it's that's where I basically got, see, we trained a lot of those horses twice a day in order to keep them basically so you can handle them but still have a lot of fitness. And then I used that whenever I trained a Fleet Alex as well.
And then you said you went on to ride steeplechase races. How long did that last?
I rode in the spring and fall for probably 2 seasons. Not a lot of great horses, but we won a few races. And, it was an education, and that's another basis where they're going a lot further. So you obviously gallop them a lot further and train them. It's slower, but steadier, and more distance to get two and a half miles. I rode a couple timber races that were, 3 miles. So you'd have to have a very fit horse underneath it.
And so what year was it that you finally took out your trainer's license, and what led to that decision?
Well, I think it was 74 or 75 whenever I did that. And it was just a matter of, I wanted to move on. I had earned up a small amount of money, about $1,200 is all I really had. And I went to Waterford Park, which is now Mountaineer. With that money, I bought 3 horses. And before the year was over, I had run those 3 into 20. And I had won a few races and basically sold all to one trainer, Dale Baird, who was leading training in the nation for years and years and years. He bought every one of them, and I bought 2 horses from him and then went to Penn National Racetrack to further my training experiences and education.
So you didn't have anybody that really served as your mentor, where you did an apprenticeship or an assistant type of trainer thing under them?
No, not really. I would just ask a lot of questions to a lot of the older, experienced trainers, and they probably got tired of it, but they all gave me answers, and it was a matter of, trying things and picking their brains, and some things would work, some things wouldn't work, and trial and error, and, I've been doing this for close to 40 years now. So, you kind of get a regimen, and you see what works, what doesn't work, and always try to take care of the best care you possibly can of all your horses and all your stock and keep them healthy and fit. And that's what I've tried to do all my career.
Which of those veteran trainers gave you the best advice and helped you the most?
I can't really say any one in particular. Dale Baird, he would preach, run horses where they can win. Obviously he did. He won a lot of races, over 5,000 races, probably closer to 6,000. I'm not sure of the numbers. But, he had a little bit of an influence on me. There were some older trainers that actually never really had opportunities with any good horses, but there were very, very good horsemen that I met both at Penn National and at Waterford Park who would make a living with those $1,000, $1,200 horses and were very good at keeping them sound and keeping them fit and keeping them healthy. And, it's not necessarily the best horsemen are at the biggest racetracks. A lot of times some of the best horsemen never get an opportunity, like I did with an Fleet Alex, to train a horse of that quality. And I think if they did, you know, that'd be a lot of those smaller trainers would be household names.
Yeah, well said. And your story kind of echoes the sentiments of a lot of trainers that we've had here on the Trainer Talk Show over the past several months, that they kind of take bits and pieces from everybody that they've been around over the years, and they incorporate those into their training methods. Is that accurate?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Tim Ritchie joining us on Trainer Talk presented by Fazit Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So your first winner, Tim, who was that?
A horse named Perfect Sleeper. That was one of the three horses that I bought for $1,200.
Well, where was that? That was at
Mountaineer? That was at Waterford Park.
Waterford Park. Okay. All right. What do you remember about that day? It had to be pretty special.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. It was, one of the horses I bought for next to nothing, and spent a little time. He had a big bow on him, and we worked on it and got him going and got him sound and won a few races with him and then sold him to somebody as a riding horse. So, it was a good start.
How much does it help having been on the riding side of things with steeplechase horses and then been part of the U.S. Olympic equestrian team? How much does that experience help you when you're conditioning and training these horses?
It helps a lot. I mean, this morning I got on five myself. So, you know, and especially a show horse background, you can feel a lot of small things that a rider who doesn't have a lot of years sitting in the saddle and riding a lot of different horses. When I was riding show horses, I would ride from 6 in the morning to 6 at night and take a half hour for lunch and just get off of one horse, get on another horse, get off of one horse, get on another horse.
Yep.
And that was a 7-day-a-week thing. So you get so you can feel every little thing. And it's helped because I'll have a rider come back and say, this horse, you know, I'm not sure what it is, but this, that, and the other. And so I'll take that horse and I'll particularly spend more time and get on it myself for a week or so, and sometimes usually it's the first day or two I can pretty much pick up what the problem is, if there is a problem. And it may be just that the horse, you know, needs a different bit. It may be that he just needs to have some chiropractic work done on him. You know, it's a lot of different things, but it really helps if you're getting on them on yourself. And anybody who gets on their own horse as a trainer, I think, has a big edge.
So if you could sum up the Tim Ritchie training philosophy in just a couple of words, what would they be?
Keep your horse fit and sound.
Fit and sound. It's that simple.
That simple. And enter them where they can win.
Yeah, we hear a lot of trainers say that. If you can place them in the right spots, then that goes a long way. And you said earlier, Tim, that a Fleet Alex was really the horse that put you on the map, and rightfully so. He almost wins the Triple Crown, but I'm sure before a Fleet Alex came along, there were some other horses that really stand out to you. Who are some of those horses?
Oh, yeah, we had a horse named Docent. He made close to 900,000. He won the Maryland Million Classic 2 years in a row. I had a horse that I bought for a client named Kathy Nimble. He was around 32,000. He won the Maryland Breeders' Cup. It was a grade sprint. It was a grade 2 or 3. Won the Philadelphia Breeders' Cup sprint. That was a graded stakes as well. He was a multiple stakes winner and made a lot of money. I had a horse named Smart Guy that I bought at the 50-50 yearling sale for $10,000. He won the Pennsylvania Derby. He won 4 or 5 stakes. He's a 3-year-old. Went on to be a stallion. Bought a horse named Gimme a Wink, also at Fasic Tipton, for $75,000. He made over $500,000, won 6 or 7 stakes. He was second in the Pennsylvania Derby, and he was a pretty nice kind of horse, too. So, you know, I've had a lot of success at the sales.
So then a Fleet Alex comes into your barn, and what do you remember about the first time you saw a Fleet Alex?
You know, I watched him I went to the sale, obviously. Watched him at the 2-year-old training sale, and his work was not very fast. It was about in the middle for the horses that went a quarter of a mile. He went 22 and some change. He just very fluid, very rhythmic. In the middle of the racetrack, the rider just sitting on him. So he was, you know, I jotted down him as well as probably 15 other numbers to go look at. And when I saw him and brought him out of the stall, there were 2 or 3 other horses in that little area that were being looked at as well, and they were leaping and jumping, and he just kind of stood there, walked down patiently, walked back, stood there like a rock, and nothing seemed to faze it. And that was basically him. Nothing really shook him at all. I remember in the Derby walk, horses were jumping all over the place, and he just walked over like a lead pony. He just had that mental coolness, and he was extremely athletic. The whole time I had him, I never saw him stumble, take a bad step, ever. I mean, he just was an extremely agile horse.
Except for the Preakness Stakes.
Well, yeah, that wasn't his fault, but it turned out all right.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about athletic and agile. That was certainly on display in the Preakness, the Scrappy T cutting him off at the top of the stretch. He nearly went down. What's going through your mind as you're watching that?
I thought the horse was going down. The rider was definitely coming off. And then when he did come back up, and Jeremy stayed on him, and he went on and won the race, I was still kind of just in awe of the situation, but I was very concerned because, you know, you don't write things. So I quickly went down to the track, and all the other horses are coming back, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, he's hurt himself. And not thinking because of the moment and where I was, then I looked up and I could see that they were walking back and doing the interview. So that relieved me a little bit, but the biggest concern was that he had done something that was, you know, going to be career-ending.
Well, he certainly did, and he went on and won the Belmont Stakes by 7 lengths and just dominated that field. So impressive. Go back to the Kentucky Derby for a minute. You show up at the Derby. What was that experience like for Tim Ritchie?
It was great. It was great. You know, anytime you can get in those kind of races with a horse that legitimately has a shot. And I've always, you know, anybody would ever ask you about the Derby, going here, going there. I say, yeah, if I have a horse that I think has a shot to win it, but I'm not just going to enter just to be in the race. There's no point in that. I thought he legitimately had a chance to win it. I thought he was the best 3-year-old in the country at the time, and he trained up to the race great. He just didn't have the best trip. And when you have a field of that size, a lot of things can happen. You know, the pace was very hot. I think they went to 3/4 and 9 and change. And like I said, he did get bumped around a little bit. I mean, Jeremy said he got hit so hard on the backside one time, he really kind of lost his breathing pattern, which takes a lot out of a horse. And for him to run the race he did was very credible, and obviously he proved his worth in the next 2 starts.
Yeah, every trainer wants to get to the Kentucky Derby. And like you said, they want to be there with a horse that can contend. Knowing that maybe, well, more than likely you were the best horse on that day, things just didn't go according to plan, does that make you want to get back there even more?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I would love to get back there. I'd love to get back there with one of his sons. You know, I think he has the pedigree, and he was the type of horse that certainly, if bred to the right mares and, you know, the horse is handled well enough, and he's going to come up with one of those kind of horses. I thought I had one a couple of years ago that was on the trail, and, you know, he was good enough. He just didn't stay sound enough.
Yeah, who was that?
A horse named Elite Alex.
Yeah. Yeah, really nice horse. How many of his offspring do you have in training now?
I've got, I think, 6 in my barn right now, some fillies, and actually one that's a 3/4 brother to him, probably living a fleet out of his half-sister, who's won his first start and then was second in stake his second start, so I've got most of my barn, of the 15 horses I have, more than half of them are either by him or related to him.
When you go to a horse sale, is that one of the things that you'll do? You'll look through the catalog and circle the Fleet Alex and then go look at them?
Yeah, I always look at, I try to look at everyone by Fleet Alex. You know, there have been some very good ones that I couldn't afford, being, you know, some of the clients I have are just limited budget. There's been a few that, you know, I thought weren't quite the same type as him, and there's been like a filly, Dancing Asleep, that I bought, and she won the Keller Oaks the other day. She was, to me, as balanced as him, had the same kind of head as him, the same kind of walk as him, and we bought her out of the Basic Tipton sale for $28,000, and she's got career earnings of over $200,000 now.
Well, the Fleet Alex stands at one of the sponsors of our horse racing radio network, Gainesway Farm, here in Lexington. Do you still get the opportunity to stop by and see him when you come to town?
Well, last time I was there, I did. I haven't been there recently, but anytime I come to the sale at Keeneland, I try and go over and at least feed him a few peppermints and say hi to him and see how he's doing.
Does he remember you?
Oh, yeah. I think he does. As soon as I walk up, he usually comes right to the stall right out of the stall, and they don't let a lot of people feed them peppermints because they're, you know, you do that too much with the stallion, they get nippy, but I have special permission and I do it.
Yeah, I talked to several trainers, and Scooter Hughes told us in the first half of the show that horses like Rahi Strada, who are so special to their operation, become like their family, and I imagine a Fleet Alex was the same way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I spent every day with him ever since we bought him at the two-year-old Fish and Tipton sale, and, you know, he was absolutely part of the family. You know, I'd walk in the barn, the first horse I'd walk to, he was in the first stall, and if I walked right past him, he'd start to stomp. He wanted his peppermint. I'd go walk over, give him a peppermint, check his legs, check him, walk him once or twice, put him back in his stall, and then we'd proceed to look at the rest of the horses. But he was a little spoiled.
Yeah, well, Graham Motion told us that he got choked up talking about saying goodbye to Animal Kingdom, and I'm sure that when you had to say goodbye to a Fleet Alex and he left your barn, it had to be somewhat bittersweet.
Yeah, actually, we were at Gulfstream, and I actually got on the van and rode back to all the way to Gainesway with him on the van through the night, and hand-delivered him, and then took a plane back to Gulfstream. So it was just me and him on the van, and, you know, it was a special trip.
Talk about some of the owners that you've been fortunate to be around and have helped you certainly build your operation. Cash is King, the owners of a Fleet Alex. But talk about them and some of the other owners.
Well, I've been fortunate enough to have some owners that had enough faith in me to let me go out and select young horses that have worked out, like in a Fleet Alex or some of the other horses I mentioned earlier. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and some of them are still with me, some of them aren't with me anymore. But, you know, it's all experiences, and you take the good, the bad, the ugly from it, and you just go on.
So what can we look forward to from the Tim Ritchie barn? What are some things that you have kind of coming up the road?
Well, I've got a few two-year-olds, and we'll see how they work out. I'm kind of short on horses right now, but I'm trying to just gather up and, you know, buy a couple young horses this year and try and, you know, my stable has gotten a little smaller, but I want to try and focus basically on quality and trying to get to the bigger races.
Yeah, and you spent much of your career, Tim, training in the Mid-Atlantic region, you know, certainly that's where a Fleet Alex, you know, kind of came into prominence. But is there any thought, or have you ever given any thought to maybe going to a bigger circuit, like let's say New York?
I've thought about it. You know, you have to really have the clients to support you to go to a track like that. You know, and that's a big thing. I mean, for me to give $75,000 for a Fleet Alex, that was a lot of money for the clients that I had at the time. I've spent more on horses for people since, but to go to a New York or a California, you've got to have some guys that are willing to have enough faith in you to put up a lot of money to let you select the right horses and do your thing and take your advice and try and get to the bigger races. And I don't really have that clientele right now, but you know, hopefully if I can get lucky with a few of my own, maybe we can do that in the future.
Tim, for people that might not understand what goes into being a horse trainer, and it's a 365-day-a-year type of job, talk about what your typical day entails.
Well, at 4:30, the alarm goes off, and jump out of bed and get ready. I'm usually at the barn by 5. We'll walk through, see who's take temperatures on everything, see who has finished their feed, who left feed, why they left feed, pull all the bandages, check all the legs, go over the set list for the morning, set all the tack for the first set, and you know, kind of proceed then to go through training of each individual horse. We'll send them out in sets, and I got on 4 or 5 today. I'll go out with the sets on a horse and gallop the horse I'm on, trying to watch the other horses at the same time, communicate with the riders of the other horses and make sure their horses are okay, how they trained that day in each particular set. And then as you come back off the next set, you communicate with the foreman who's back at the barn, see how the horses cooled out, if anybody didn't drink any water, anybody was coughing, any little variations in their daily routine. And horses thrive on routine. So we try and do it. Horses go in the first set, they go in the first set unless they're going to breeze or something. And they just do better when they have a routine. They fall into things better. And then we're usually done training. I try and get done early because of the heat in the summer. This morning we had trained 15 horses. By 9 o'clock we were done. And then we'll go over the horses again, decide what we're going to do each individual opt-in. Some of them get their legs painted. Some of them get different therapy. Some of them be done in poultice. And then set feed for lunch. And then whenever I like to have one in the eighth race, I'll go back. We'll run that horse. I'll go to the barn, make sure everything's good. And then after that, we'll come back, do evening chores, and I'll be home by probably 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Now, when do you get a chance to sleep?
Well, I'm in bed usually by 8:30 every night. The sun's still up, and I'm asleep.
Talk about your family for just a minute, and are any of them involved with the game?
Yeah, I have a son who does my website and does Facebook and all those kind of things. He actually has another job. He works in New York City, but he does that as well. And then I have a younger son who gallops horses for me and is an assistant trainer for me. And he also helps me. He's worked for me for a few years. He worked for John Service for a year. He worked for Nick Zito for a short period of time. And now he's working back with me again, which has made him a little more rounded individual. And it's, you know, like I told him, experiences are what make you. So get as many of them as you can.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned your website and you mentioned Facebook. How important is it to utilize social media to help you grow your stable and to attract new clients?
Actually, the few new clients I've picked up in the last year or two have been through our website and Facebook. And like when we won the Delaware Oaks the other day, my son posted a few things on the website and the Facebook, and we had like 400 or 500 hits. So, you know, it's there's a lot of people out there that are really looking at things like that. And I think it's probably very important, and it's going to be more important in the future.
Yeah, and by the way, that website is timfritchieracingstables.com, timfritchieracingstables.com, if you want to learn more about Tim Ritchie and his operation. Tim, how about any other hobbies that you have outside of horse racing when you do get an opportunity to break away from the track? And I know that's rare, but what else would Tim Ritchie like to do?
Well, Sundays we usually just walk, and I'll go in and go over the horses early, and I usually like to try and play 18 holes of golf on Sundays if I can get away and do it, and that's kind of a mini vacation.
Pretty good golfer?
Yeah, I'll shoot low 80s.
That is pretty good. Is it harder to train these horses or to hit that little white ball?
I think it's harder to hit the ball.
Great. I would certainly agree with you there. Absolutely. It's an evil game.
Yeah, it can be. Your best shot can turn out to be a dynamite shot, can turn out to hit something and just bounce wrong, and a bad shot. I've made two hole ones. One went in on a fly and was a great shot. The other one was kind of bouncing all over the place and went in. So it was a very lucky hole in one, but you never can tell with that.
Wait a minute. Two hole in ones?
Yeah.
Wow, that's and you think that's harder than training horses? You're pretty good at that golf stuff. You've got that down.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, like I said, one was a great shot. It looked like it was in the whole way, and it was. And the other one kind of bounced and jumped off the side of a hill and rolled and went in, and that was pretty amazing that it went in. But you know, it's like I said, it's like a little bit of a mini vacation because you get away. I'll turn the phone off and. You know, golf courses are pretty well-designed, and I play with a couple of clients of mine, and we don't talk horses until after everything's done, and then, you know, we'll have a little side bet here and there and play golf.
Well, Tim, we can't thank you enough for telling your story, and I'm sure that our listeners have really enjoyed it. I have, and I appreciate you taking the time here tonight. All of our guests who appear live on Trainer Talk will receive gifts courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips and EPO Equine, so we'll get those out to you, and again, thank you so much for being here. Really enjoyed it.
Okay, you're more than welcome.
All right, Trainer Tim Ritchie. Again, Tim F. Ritchie, racingstables.com is where you can learn more about Tim. And, boy, that story he told about a Fleet Alex and riding on the van all the way to Gainesway after he retired and just having that moment alone with a Fleet Alex. That's really what this sport is all about. And so many times those types of stories get lost in the shuffle and we don't have the opportunity to bring them to light. So great to hear that story from Tim. And if you missed any portion of this show, you can go back to our website later on this evening and throughout tomorrow, whenever it is convenient for you. And you can listen to a podcast of this show. You can also catch it on iTunes, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Do want to remind you that we are back tomorrow from 3 to 7 Eastern Time. This segment tomorrow from 6 to 7 is going to be our Bristnet.com call-in show, your chance to call in and talk some racing. Del Mar, Saratoga, all in full swing. You can do that tomorrow from 6 to 7 Eastern Time. And then on Friday, we're back from 3 to 7 Eastern with the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview from 6 to 7. Our thanks to special guests Scooter Hughes and Tim Ritchie for joining us here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. For Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time.